Hello, everyone. This is Nicholas Katman. Welcome to the Life Science Rundown. Before we jump into our discussion for today, just a little bit about the FDA group. We help life science companies in the areas of quality assurance, regulatory affairs, clinical operations, commissioning, qualification, and validation, as well as CMC. We offer three different engagement models, which are consulting, staff augmentation, and full-time employee recruitment. So if you ever find yourself in need, just head over to thefdagroup.com to check us out and get in touch. So today I am speaking with Paul Hakamaki. Hello, Paul.
Hey, good afternoon, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How about yourself?
Great.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me. So today we're going to be talking about medical device supplier management from selection, qualification through production. So before we jump into that topic, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so Paul Hakamaki, I'm currently a vice president of quality at a structural heart company, but I've been in the medical device industry since 1996. And my educational background, mechanical engineer, and then I picked up my MBA along the way. And I joined the medical device industry in 96, working for implantable pacemakers and defibrillator company. And I started as a supplier quality engineer, actually. And since then, I've had various quality roles in multiple organizations, both small, I was at a startup company, I've been in medium-sized companies and larger companies, and all within quality. And I would say the majority of my time has been spent in supplier management, supplier quality. And I've spoken at different conferences on this topic. I've taught some classes locally in the Twin Cities here, and I'm pretty passionate about supplier quality because in my history, supplier quality, supplier management might be kind of an underrepresented kind of skill set and area, and I'm really passionate about it. So hopefully I'll share some of my experiences and wisdom today with the audience, and hopefully some of it resonates.
Yeah, well, very cool. Well, it sounds like you kind of started in this space and have held on to it as you've kind of proceeded through your career. So that's, I'm sure we're going to get a lot of good information. So why don't we start at a very high level? You know, what's the intent of supplier management?
Yeah, so I think supplier management kind of can be broken down or distilled down to three really fundamental concepts. It's all about expectations. It's about ensuring that as a customer, you understand what expectations you have for your suppliers. It's then managing risks, and it's also developing a partnership. You know, in the med device industry, you don't want to have very tactical, transactional relationships with suppliers. That's not the type of industry this is. So you need to have partnerships. It needs to be risk-based, and you really need to make sure expectations are clearly communicated, your suppliers understand those expectations, and they are able to meet your expectations, not only upfront during the design process, but also ongoing as you transition into production.
You mentioned the word partnership, and you said that it can't be transactional, and I generally understand what that means. However, could you define what a good partnership would look like and what a transactional setup might look like?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so when I think of the spectrum of suppliers and components that a med device company works with, it probably spans the spectrum of being very simple, perhaps off-the-shelf type components. And those types of supplier relationships might be more transactional. You know, you're buying a widget, you're buying a fairly benign widget that is mass-produced and well-characterized, and therefore the amount of rigor you put into qualifying the supplier and the component are very minimal, and it's more transactional. But on the other end of the spectrum, I would say the majority of components and materials med device companies work with are probably custom in nature. The manufacturer develops a specification, a design print, and suppliers then are trying to meet that print or specification. And that's where expectations and amount of rigor you put into qualifying suppliers and those components goes way up. And having a solid foundation of a partnership really ensures long-term success, because it's sometimes the supplier is going to want to propose changes or make changes. Sometimes you as a customer are going to want to make changes. You're always looking to try to drive higher quality, perhaps lower cost. And so it really takes a partnership to do that instead of just transactional or adversarial. That would be, you know, the worst.
How would somebody, if they wanted a partnership type of situation, what are some of the key components or key aspects of their behavior that would allow for a successful collaboration? And what are some of the behaviors that would hinder that type of relationship?
Yeah, so I think it comes down to understanding expectations, Nick. You know, every supplier probably has a target customer, a target market that they're trying to pursue. And I've had personal experiences where, you know, being a med device customer, if you try to engage with a supplier that is not familiar with the med device industry and its expectations, you're setting yourself up for failure. You're setting yourself up for challenges. And so I think it really comes down to making sure that the supplier you partner with understands not only the customers, call it specific expectations, but the expectations of the industry in general. I'll give you change management, I think, is a very classic example of an expectation that not every industry knows how to deal with, or not every supplier knows how to deal with. In the med device space, you qualify a component or a material, and at that point in time, you want to lock down the design, the composition of that component or material, and any types of changes going forward need to be well understood. And oftentimes, it needs to be approved by the customer. Well, there are many components and materials that are produced by suppliers that they don't understand that, and they don't want to be handcuffed to change management requirements, and so they won't follow those requirements. And all of a sudden, a med device company might get a shipment in of some material, and it behaves differently. Come to find out, something changed. And now that opens up a whole can of worms. So a lot of the success is really understanding those expectations and having both sides say, yep, we got it. We understand the expectations and we are partnering together to meet those.
Okay, great. So what are some of the roles of supplier management?
Yeah, I think there are two key roles in supplier management. I think because fundamentally you're having a business relationship with a supplier and you're having a technical relationship with a supplier. And so I think it takes two key roles to fulfill that span. I think it takes a purchasing type professional, and they're very focused on business aspects. They're focused on forecasting. They're focused on inventory management. They're focused on pricing. And then it takes a supplier quality engineer, which I have a lot of experience with, handling the technical relationship with a supplier, making sure those expectations are understood and met. And then very importantly, once you're in more of a production mode, you're probably going to have issues. Either you're going to have quality issues or you're going to have issues dealing with change. Somebody wants to make a change and you have to work through those change processes. And so I think it takes two, a purchasing type professional and like a supplier quality engineer, business and technical. They partner together, they then partner with a supplier. Typically the supplier would have those kind of same counterparts. They would have somebody in the you know, working with customer service and purchasing, and then have a quality engineer on their side that works with a supplier quality engineer.
Mm-hmm. What is what's the responsibility of the supplier quality engineer? And is that a role that a company should outsource or have full-time staff? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah. So So what I've seen in my experience is a lot of a lot of times people that maybe don't fully appreciate a supplier quality engineer think, oh, supplier quality engineers, they do audits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a key piece of the supplier quality puzzle. And you can outsource to a third party audits. You can contract and say, hey, go audit these six firms on quality systems, see how they comply to 1345, say. And a third party can do that. And you can then check the box that says, yeah, I have audited my suppliers. I think the, and you may do that as a maybe a smaller company, you don't have a lot of resources yet, but there's definitely disadvantages to that. Every time you visit a supplier, you learn about that supplier. And it's an opportunity to form a relationship with that supplier, or strengthen a relationship with a supplier. So I'm a strong advocate that just as much as you need might need a manufacturing engineer and a design engineer, you're going to need a supplier quality engineer if you have more than a couple suppliers, because they're the ones that are going to focus on that technical relationship with the supplier. And there's enough meat there, I think, in supplier quality that it should be pretty high on the priority list.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that some people say supplier quality engineer, okay, you're going to audit, right? And so that's part of it. But then as you kind of went through your explanation, there's a lot of kind of nuance in that supplier quality engineer and supplier relationship that can reap benefits to the company. So what does that look like?
Yeah, there could be numerous benefits. I think at the call it the end of the day, the objective, the holy grail of having a strong partnership with a supplier is that you don't have a whole lot of interaction with that supplier. You know, they are providing materials and components on time, their quality, you're having probably some sort of an inspection process perhaps. Quality is good, delivery is good, they're not pounding on your door for any types of changes. You do quality system audits perhaps periodically and everything looks good. So those are the best kind of suppliers to have. And that's the most benefit to the organization, because the more time and energy you have to spend with a supplier that needs help, then that's costing resources, time, and energy. And so the benefits are your expectations are fully met. If your expectations are fully met, then that's a huge benefit. If they're not met, then you got to put time and energy into getting those expectations met. And if your expectations aren't met, that could end up, worst case scenario, you got field issues, you got field problems, your product has a non-conformance. Mm-hmm. Now, those are the worst case scenarios. You don't want to have to deal with that.
Certainly not. I want to ask you about what your approach is with suppliers, but before I ask you to respond, one of the things that I've noticed about myself is if there's a topic that I feel very strong in my knowledge base, I've made the incorrect assumption that, well, of course, everybody knows that, right? And what I found is that just because I've spent decades in a particular space, sometimes you forget that even what seems elementary and remedial, it isn't well known, right? So for people that, and again, this might be a little bit of a challenge because some people listening have a lot of years experience in this space and some not as much. So what is your approach when it comes to suppliers and supplier management? How would you define that?
Yeah, I think so. Earlier in my career, as I was developing kind of my beliefs in supplier management, supplier quality, one of the key documents that I read that has really helped create a foundation of my knowledge and thoughts was put out by the GHTF. That was a Global Harmonization Task Force, which was a cross-country, multi-person organization that existed back in the early 2000s. And they put out a guidance document in 2008, and it's all about the control and management of suppliers. And it's a wonderful document. I would encourage anybody that wants to kind of understand maybe the fundamentals of supplier management, take a look at that GHTF document. And it basically walks through kind of six stages or six steps for working with suppliers. And the first one is really you need to understand what your requirements and call up the severities are of the material or component you want to source with a supplier. You need to know how important is that widget you want to get from a supplier, because how important that component is, and I talk about severities, then that will dictate how much rigor that you should put into qualifying the supplier.
Yep.
And then call it independently that you should put in how much rigor you should put into qualifying what they provide you. And once you qualify the supplier and the component, that's kind of reaching a milestone, then you want to have a control plan put in place to ensure that what they demonstrated during qualification will also be delivered ongoing into production. And so then once you're in production, you want to have supplier management tools, corrective action processes, request for change processes, and there's a whole aspect of just managing or working on that relationship. And there needs to be supplier feedback and continuous improvement. You know, reaching the utmost of maturity in supplier quality, it's about being super proactive and really working on continuous improvement, whether it's quality improvement, cost improvement, but really you're working on proactive things. So the GHTF document, I think, lays out a six-stage kind of process, which I've used ever since learning about it.
What is it missing? So obviously that's a foundational document. You've benefited from it. But through your years of experience, if you were in charge of everything, what would you remove from there, or what would you add?
Yeah. Well, the document is written somewhat like a instruction book. Do this, do this, do this. And I think what I have learned that you need to do, and it's been confirmed to me, I have a new supplier quality engineer in my team right now who doesn't have a whole lot of supplier quality experience. And so I'm trying to teach and educate him in the space of supplier quality. And so the GHTF tells you kind of step by step what to do, but I think what it's missing and what the new engineer in my group I'm trying to educate him on is there's a whole human relationship aspect to all of this work. You can't be a bulldog and just say, supplier, give me this, do that, do that. That's not conducive of forming a strong relationship, because you want to strive for that type of relationship where you say, hey, supplier, I had an issue in our manufacturing. I find myself lower in inventory than I expected. Can you expedite and get me some more material? You know, if you have that kind of transactional relationship, they might say, hey, oh, sorry, can't do anything. But if you have a really true partnership, that supplier is going to say, hey, yeah, all right, got it. You know, we're going to see what we can do, and we're going to work overtime, and we're going to try to meet your expectation. And so I think what's missing from a lot of these kinds of documents or articles or books you can read, it's that human element, that human element. And I love having suppliers, ideally, that are close to me, where I can go there. A face-to-face conversation, touring their manufacturing processes, that's where you can really develop that relationship. Go out and having lunch with them. You know, it's just spending time getting to know people, because at the end of the day, it's a people business. We're all kind of in the people business to a degree. And relationships are based on how well do you get along as people. And so I think that's what's kind of missing from a lot of these types of documents. It's when you're interacting with different organizations, there's relationships and it's human relationships. And you need to put time and energy into being a good partner and being a good human, so to speak.
I think that's a really good point. There's some tangible pieces of what you said that really resonate with me. And then there's some intangible ones. So the tangible ones are, and I can speak because we're a supplier and vendor. We don't sell widgets. We have services. But the reality for us and many, many others is if you're constantly working with your supplier and vendor with vinegar as opposed to sugar, they will react very much like you said. And I can tell you that I have it's been extremely rare, if not non-existent, that I've bent over backwards for somebody that speaks to me with vinegar.
Right.
And those that speak to me with sugar, they are the ones that are able to reap that benefit.
Yep.
This is maybe slightly adjacent to that topic, but I will say there's a balance between revenue and headaches, mm-hmm. right? So if you're a big, if the supplier you're using and you're one of their biggest customers, they're willing to put up with more headaches.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're a smaller supplier, you can still gain the benefit of if you're a small client, you can still reap the benefits of a large client if you speak to them with sugar. Because yes. I've bent over backwards for some of our smallest clients because, mm-hmm. again, there's that human element. So that's kind of the tangible part that I was thinking about. But in addition to that, the intangible part is how do you want to spend your days? Right? Do you want to spend your days in a cloud of negativity and just hammering people? Or to your point, do you want to be a partner and say, look, I get it. I understand. I've made mistakes also. Let's work together in order to get that. And, you know, and then just enjoying your day, you know, mm-hmm. how is your son's soccer game? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. is your mother doing better or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. So not only is there a tangible benefit by treating them that way, there will be a return on that investment.
Absolutely.
But also on the other side, you're just going to be a happier person overall.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
One of the points you made, which I really liked, was the word that's coming to me is critical. You used a different word, severe. How severe is that supply?
Yep.
That component.
Yep.
And that has to be equitable with the rigor in which you look into that. So let's talk a little bit about risk-based processes. We've obviously this isn't a newish idea, but it continues to gain momentum and be analyzed and looked at and fine-tuned. So can you speak to that?
Yeah. So yeah, and so the word I use a lot kind of in this topic is severity. And some people will say, well, aren't you just talking about risk, Paul? And technically not. If you take a look at the definition of risk, risk is the severity times occurrence. And that's the classic definition of risk when you're talking about, say, FMEAs, DFMEAs. And so when I talk about severity of a component requirement, oftentimes this component is brand new or it's very new and I don't have any occurrence data. I don't know how often a failure may take place or a requirement may not be met. Therefore, I don't have occurrence data. And so I base a lot of the analysis, upfront analysis on a component requirements based on severity. And you know, in the med device industry, the standard five classifications of severity, you'll see it in 14971. That's the standard by which we want to judge or base a requirement on to get a severity score. And so every component, and this is where I think a supplier quality person can add value to the design side of the world too, is we need to look at every requirement that we have for a particular component or material, every dimension, every note. Fundamentally, each one of those is a requirement that we want the supplier to meet. Like I said, it could be dimension, it could be a surface finish, it could be no foreign material bigger than 0.2 square, you know, millimeters. Every requirement on a print or on a spec needs to be evaluated to understand the severity if that requirement is not achieved. And, you know, if there's a requirement that if the if it's out of tolerance, that could have patient safety impact, that's going to be a high severity requirement. And so what we do is we have a simple spreadsheet, essentially, that we list every requirement, just like a DFMEA. We list every requirement, and then we say, what will happen if this requirement's not met? And we'll give it a severity score based on those five classifications. You can also add in, maybe you're going to, what will be the impact of that requirement's not met, say, in the manufacturing? So you could kind of alter it and kind of tailor it. But at the end, you want to understand what's the severity of that requirement not being met. And then you can look at, you got 20 requirements for a component. The highest one is a 4, and that puts you into a high risk category or a high severity category. Then that's the bar you should use to qualify the component and qualify that supplier. And you should have, what we then would have is a matrix. So if a supplier is low, you know, have low, medium, and risk severities, and the requirements for low are relatively simple, medium, a little bit more, high, more. Same with component qualification. The requirements for a low severity component might be fairly minimal. Medium gets more, high gets more yet.
Yeah, I saw a cartoon, I think it was on LinkedIn, and it was talking about risk, and it had a man, a stick figure, that had a cross different water or pits, and they were measuring it on two, and maybe you can fill me in on what the two terms are. But there's a small little pit, and it's shallow. So it's unlikely he's going to fall in the pit, and if he does, it's really not that big of a deal.
Right.
Then
right.
There's a very small pit, but it's very deep. So it's unlikely that he's going to fall in, but if he does, it's really, really bad.
Right.
Then there's another pit, and it's very big, but it's shallow. So the likelihood he falls in is very high, but really no big deal. Right. And then obviously the final one is it's very long and it's very deep.
Right.
And so what were those two terms? I can't recall.
Yeah, I believe what you're talking about there is severity and occurrence. I remember
severity and occurrence. Okay.
Yeah, it's the severity is depth.
The occurrence is the likelihood of it happening.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really good way to understand
it. That's a great visual.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we talked about the different steps. So what happens after a supplier and a component are qualified? Now we've done that. Now what?
Yeah. Yeah. So you've reached a milestone. You know, you have assessed risk. Assess severity, you've qualified the component, you've qualified the supplier, you basically have come to the conclusion that the supplier is capable of providing that component or material to you. They have the process understanding and knowledge to do that. Now, the next key piece of the puzzle is to make sure that they can continue to produce that material or component ongoing as you go into production and so forth. And so the concept of a control plan is very important. And here is, this is going to be where you want to take your severity assessment of that component. You want to understand what are the highest severity requirements and where should we try to have quality at the source? You know, you don't want to inspect quality later on. Inspection is kind of non-value added to a degree. And so what you want to say is, hey, this diameter is very critical to us. All right, well, where is that diameter produced? Well, it's produced at the supplier.
Right.
So, hey, supplier, we would like you to measure this diameter. And so you would work with the supplier and you would conclude that, all right, we want that diameter measured, we want this length measured, and we want you to do inspection for foreign material. And they'll say, okay, we will do that. So they'll have a document, and so you have a control plan where this is what the supplier is going to do for control. There's various inspections, maybe tests. And then if for some reason the supplier can't perform a measurement or an inspection, and it's critical, then as the customer, you should do it during your receiving inspection process. And so then if you put those two together, now you have the confidence that your critical requirements, your important requirements, they're either being assessed at the source, at the supplier, and ideally they're providing you data on that. And if they can't do it for some reason, you're going to do it at some sort of receiving inspection or possibly in-process inspection. So that's the concept of a control plan, making sure that all those important requirements are being checked and verified that they're being met. And then it could even go to the point where there might be an uber critical requirement. Let's say it is that diameter. The supplier may measure that diameter and provide you some data to say, hey, on this lot, we measure 29 diameters and here's our data. But because it's so critical, as the customer, you may also want to measure some of those diameters. Okay, great. But what you don't want to have then happen is the supplier says the data is good and you say, hey, the data is not so good. So in that case, then you want to do like a correlation study to make sure that your test methods are equivalent. And so it's all based on risk. You know, how much rigor do you want to put? If the requirement is not uber critical, rely on the supplier's data on that diameter. Mm-hmm. But if it's super critical, then both sides should measure it. But then you both need to put in more time and energy to make sure that your test methods are equivalent.
Mm.
Return so control plan is fundamentally the next thing that helps ensure that ongoing the product or material will be evaluated appropriately to make sure it meets all your important expectations.
Yeah, and it's and to your point, it's kind of a return on investment because mm-hmm. time is money. So yep. it, you know, if the you know severity of non-conformance is very high, you know, then I really want to make sure that we're being rigorous in making sure that it's meeting those specifications. But again, if it's slightly off and it's not that big of a deal, we can rely on the supplier.
Right. Right.
Yep. Okay. So we talked about qualification. We talked about the continuous improvement plan. What are some of the other aspects that come along with this type of program that we haven't already discussed?
Yeah, so what we've primarily focused on now is qualifying components and suppliers, establishing a control plan. But then
control plan, that's what I meant to say, right? Yep, control yep. plan, and then comes continuous improvement, right?
Right. Well, ideally, so you know, the pinnacle of a supplier quality, you know, what does a supplier quality engineer really want to work on? Well, a supplier, they really want to work on more positive things than firefighting. Firefighting right. is working on, you know, non-conformances and issues, and that's not fun. So what supplier quality engineers want to work on is working with a supplier to improve. Whether it's improving their quality, improving their detectability on something, helping them reduce cost perhaps. So that's where a supplier quality organization matures, is when they can move away from firefighting because they've done all that really good foundational work very well. They got the right suppliers, and the suppliers can meet your expectations with their components and materials. And then you could be working with that supplier on improvements and continuous improvement. Because like I said, there's always a desire to improve quality and there's always a desire to reduce cost. And reducing cost isn't about, you know, beating up on the supplier just saying reduce cost. That's not going to work in the long run. What you want to do is work with them to say, hey, how can we take cost out of your processes? You know, can we improve, can we put in some efficiencies? I was at one major medical device company early on, and we actually had basically a Six Sigma team that was dedicated to working with suppliers to help improve their processes because we knew it would improve quality and fundamentally reduce cost. And so we dedicated resources, engineering black belts, to go work with suppliers. That's kind of the holy grail. That's where you really want to be spending your time and energy, because then everybody wins. You know, it's win-win-win, and quality's improving and costs are coming down.
Yeah. You mentioned the holy grail, Right. So that's the pinnacle. How does somebody determine how well they're doing with supplier management? And if they wanted to evaluate themselves, because we've talked about the GHTF, we've talked about the different aspects of a program such as this. And a lot of people that are listening might say, I do all that stuff. I'm aware of that document, and yet I still don't know how good am I compared to the industry standard. So, how would you address that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so my initial reaction to that is a lot of things like this probably follow a maturity curve. And what I mean by that is if maybe you're a small company and you don't have, say, dedicated supplier quality type resources, and you're bringing in different materials or components, if you're at the low end of the maturity curve, you're going to be dealing with issues. You're going to be firefighting. And you're going to be firefighting probably just a whole bunch of issues, and you're going to feel like it's whack-a-mole. Oh, I didn't get a cert from that supplier. You got to call that guy. Oh, this one's out of spec. I got to call this other supplier. Oh, the delivery's late. Oh, I got to call that supplier. And so it'll be very firefighting in nature. And so that's very low maturity. Once you then have the ability to hire some dedicated resources, again, kind of a purchasing type professional, supplier quality type professional, then it becomes you get what you measure. And so I think you need to put in some simple metrics and start measuring where are you at? Where are you at in terms of quality? How do you want to try to articulate quality? Do you have receiving inspection? If you don't have it, you probably should put that in as a way to gather data. Is the supplier meeting our expectations? And so putting in place several metrics, because you can't improve what you can't measure. So start to measure things about that supplier. And then you can grow from there, because once you start to get reliable quality, reliable delivery, and a lot of times the business issues and the technical issues, they're meshed together. A supplier might have really poor delivery. It's not just because, that's not just a business issue. They might have delivery issues because of a quality issue. And so you gotta unweave and peel the onion back on those kinds of issues. And so putting in place some simple metrics and getting a baseline of stability would be kind of like a milestone. And then from there, it's just putting in place improvement metrics. And like I said, the holy grail is you want to move from reactive to proactive and be working on continuous improvement projects and not firefighting. There is a continuum there, and it's a journey, and but I think you need to do it with data and making sure you understand what your expectations are. And if you can articulate your expectations as a customer, communicate those to a supplier, have metrics to try to track how those expectations are being achieved, and you work on getting those to be met, with that holy grail always being kind of that proverbial carrot.
Yeah, for sure. I have a couple more questions. You mentioned the GHTF is a guidance document that's really foundational, and for somebody that isn't familiar with that document, that certainly would probably be a good place to start. What other resources are out there, and what can they provide to people that are interested in this topic?
Yeah. Well, I talk a lot about risk and risk management. So ISO 14971 is another excellent document to reference and understand risk and risk management. Another document that I think is very, very good, it's ISO 13485, but you can get in ISO 13485 is a set of requirements, but there's also a guidance document that is published. And the guidance document that goes with 1345, it gives you the requirement, but then it also has multiple paragraphs about what is the intent of that requirement. And so that is a wonderful document to, it kind of peels the onion layer back for you a couple times to say, really, what is this requirement? What does it mean? And I think that's another really good document to have.
Yeah.
And I would also suggest to people simply checking out, you can do some Google searches and find FDA documents. The FDA has put out a lot of documents around supplier management, and they've given a lot of presentations to industry. I've seen a lot of like PowerPoint decks out there, and I think they've done a pretty good job over the last 10 years trying to push information out to the industry on supplier controls, because I think they've recognized that supplier controls is one area that med device companies can trip up on pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Awesome. I will do a quick little plug on our website, thefdagroup.com. Under resources, we have white papers and webinars for supplier management. So in addition to what Paul discussed, if anybody else is interested in more information, you can go to our website. And I want to kind of throw you on the spot a little bit, because I'm a storyteller and I like stories. Do you have a particular memory of a supplier situation that was interesting and the audience might find entertaining?
Sure. Yeah, I do actually.
Okay.
So I was at a medium-sized medical device company, implantable. And I remember our senior management asked me and our the purchasing leader, the senior management wanted to understand supply chain risk. Give us a feel for our supply chain risk. And okay, so we could do that. You know, we could say, hey, we have a list of 27 suppliers. Here's their incoming, receiving inspection yield, their delivery. You know, we could do kind of the basics. All right, you know, numbers, quantitative. But numbers and data sometimes don't tell the full story. And so we had a supplier that provided a pretty critical component for us. And they operated, come to find out, they operated out of their garage. They had a detached garage that they operated out of. And the location was here in the Twin Cities. It was a suburb of the Twin Cities. And so I wanted to try to convey to our senior management that this is a risk. And so this was a few years ago. What I did is I went to Google Earth. I took a street view picture of the house with the garage sitting offset in the back. And there's all sorts of trees. You know, it's suburban, so there's trees and it's a house. And I put that on a PowerPoint slide. And I said, this is where we get XYZ component. And all the senior leaders, they knew what XYZ component was. And I said, we're getting it from a house down, you know, 10 miles from here. And that kind of opened people's eyes. It was like, oh my gosh. Because there's risk everywhere with that. What if that tree falls down on the garage? What if there's a fire? You know, there's probably only six people working there. And so that just really opened people's eyes to like, oh my God, how could we have allowed a supplier that's operating out of their garage in the backyard? How could we have allowed that? Mm. And so and I ended up using that same type of philosophy, that same type of a strategy at another company, where a supplier did not want us to come there to do any type of an audit or a visit. And as a way to show my management that, hey, this is a concern, I took a picture of them from Google Earth. And it was more like a farm building, a white little farm building. And that conveyed a lot of, you know, just a picture's worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
And so I've used that successfully twice to demonstrate to others that there's risk.
Yeah. Awesome. This has been really informative. Anything else you want to leave the audience with before we close?
Well, I would just say that I think I'm pretty passionate about supplier management, supplier quality, and I would just hope that if there's one takeaway people have is it's an important area. It's an important area that has a technical and business element to it, and you may have heard that, you know, a company's performance is it's it's a company is made up of suppliers in a network, right? It's kind of like a chain, and you're only going to be as strong as your weakest link, so to speak. So a supplier can make or break you, right? In the desperate times, they can save your back, but they can also sink your ship too, you know, if they can't deliver. So I would encourage people just to appreciate the subject matter. And if you have the ability to put energy and resources into it, I'd encourage you to do so. Okay. Because I think you'll get a return on investment.
Yeah, perfect. Everybody likes to hear that, especially the purchasing agents. So right. Thank you, Paul. This was fantastic. For everybody listening, as always, if you find conversations like this valuable, please share it with a colleague or your professional network. If you haven't already, subscribe to get updates of new episodes at thefdagroup.com/podcast and follow the FDA Group on LinkedIn. If you would like to connect about project or resource needs, head over to thefdagroup.com to get in touch. And feel free to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. So thanks everyone for tuning in. See y'all next time. Thanks, Paul.
Yep. Bye.